Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and also welcome to another new year, where we are kicking off with a crossover event. So the episode you'll hear today was originally recorded for Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health, the other suitably long-titled show that I host, and features one of the all-time favourite guests, Damona Hoffman, who's appeared on this show. And as someone at the forefront of dating, writing about dating, coaching people about dating, podcasting about it, she is a huge inspiration of mine, and so I couldn't quite let her insights slip by not being on this equally relevant platform. So in the conversation, you'll hear us cross the bridge between mental health and relationships and what a big factor they can be in each other. So I hope you enjoy this little preview of my other show if you've never listened to it. And if you're new to the podcast, we'll be back with a more regular example of one of our episodes in 2 weeks' time. Also, quick shout out to Apple Podcasts, who has started off the year by running a new beginnings feature, which for Ireland and the UK includes this podcast. And that's the kind of thing that helps us stay relevant, stay findable, and compete as an independent show. So if you found us through that, welcome. With that all said, we'll get into this crossover episode from Mental with Damona Hoffman right now.
Hi, I'm Damona Hoffman, and now I work as a dating and relationship coach, but I once struggled with dating, and it actually, I think, began in my hometown of East Lansing, Michigan, a kind of unique background. I am Black, I am Jewish, I'm biracial, and no one in my hometown of East Lansing, Michigan is any of those things, and certainly not all of those things. And my parents really came from two different worlds. They both loved each other very much, but they were not so great at compromise. And I didn't have a great relationship role model for that. And my parents started having trouble when I was about 12 years old. And they suggested that I go to therapy, which was hilarious to me at the time because I was like, wait, you two are having a problem, so I need to go to therapy? At that time, it was very stigmatized. It very much felt like no other kids are doing this. And of course, no one was talking about it. But I went to therapy anyway. And at that point, I didn't really understand what was happening and what was the value for me. So I really pushed it away for many years. And it wasn't until I got to college that I ended up in that pressure cooker that college is. I had my first panic attack, and that sent me to the student health center where I realized that turns out I actually did need therapy. Mm-hmm. And through that, that's where I kind of really began my mental health journey.
And you referred to an it. Was that mental health for you generally, or was there a specific thing that you found out was a diagnosis at one point?
I did not have a diagnosis. I just have found that, look, we all have these high-stress moments in our lives, and especially going through transitions. Parents divorcing or parent moving out, that's a major disruptor in any household. I think my parents realized that, and my dad is a healthcare professional, so he had always valued mental health as part of the whole suite of healthcare experience. But I just, as a child, I didn't really understand what was happening or how therapy could help me to form deeper relationships, to understand myself better, to be a better communicator. And so I'm really grateful that I did find therapy when I did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I know this is something that we absolutely have in common, that therapy is so helpful. And also, I'd argue it's so important when it comes to relationships. You know, we've got to figure out who we are. What's that starting point? When so often the inclination is, who's the person for me? We want to always start with which person out there is going to solve a lot in my life and complete things.
Oh, yes. That you complete me myth we have bought into. You and I both know it's not true. It's about two people or more coming to the table as whole people. And that's really when the healthiest relationships can be built, And even if you didn't have a relationship role model, as I call it, you can still build that for yourself if you have the tools and you're willing to do the work. I mean, I hate to call it work, Bobby, because it's work, but it's
very
not.
LA.
Yeah, it is very LA. And it's also like when I say work, then people are like, oh, I don't want that. And this is, I very intentionally chose to be a dating coach rather than a matchmaker because I don't want to give people just the quick fix. Even when I started out originally as a dating profile writer, back when that was not even a thing, like before Instagram was a thing and there were a billion dating experts on Instagram, I was like the secret profile whisperer for friends and relatives. And then ultimately it was all word of mouth initially because nobody wanted to talk about the fact that they were online dating. Like that was very stigmatized. And I realized I had a knack for helping people to build these great profiles that were attracting new dates in, but then they were going on the dates and doing the same things that they were doing in their past relationships. And they were continuing to just reinforce patterns that weren't being dealt with before they began the online dating process. So as you get more people into the dating pool, like I like to say, it's like you're pouring water into a leaky funnel. If you haven't shored up all of the you stuff, then you're going to be seeking out people that are filling holes for you. You're going to be looking for that person to complete you, or you're going to be playing out other roles in your life or other things that still need healing. And that's what I say when I mean the work, but matchmaking is different. Like people are like, oh, just set me up with somebody. And I have a lot of respect for matchmakers. They are a great tool in expanding your dating pool. But again, if you're not really willing to look in that mirror at yourself, if I'm just giving you dates, I'm doing you a disservice because you're not going to get the perspective, the wonderful perspective that the dating process can actually teach you.
Yeah. And I think it's not a coincidence that I'm yet to come across any matchmakers that literally just do the matching up. There's always some element of like coaching and just encouraging people to, you know, try and approach dating differently or try and sort of think differently about that process. You know, there's always that element. And I could not agree with you more about the leaky funnel analogy. And I would sometimes go one step further, and I'd be interested if you agree, because we often come across conversations around people having types. And I see a lot of the times, is it types or is it a pattern? Because, you know, I don't mind putting the spotlight on myself and saying that when I look back, a lot of the patterns in my dating pool were me dating similar people and expecting different results. Like, why does it keep not working out with these emotionally unavailable people when myself am also coming across kind of emotionally unavailable? How could it be going wrong?
Oh, that is very insightful. And you're absolutely right. And I actually talk about this in my new book. I talk about the myths that we buy into. And one of the major myths is the list myth, where we're just dating by like, this is what's on my list. This is what I want. This is what I'm going after. And so many times that is reinforced by the people that we're already dating. So what we are responding to is familiarity. When we say, oh, I felt the spark, what you're feeling is a sense of familiarity and comfort because you're like, oh, I already know this. A lot of times what you already know, it's gotten you the result that you don't necessarily want. So that's where I really encourage people to go a level deeper. I say, instead of talking about what's on your list, talk about how you want to feel on the date, because you may not recognize the package that the person comes in, but you're going to recognize that feeling. I use all kinds of tools with my clients, from visualization to creating a living vision that they write out a narrative in the future. And so many times they tell me, oh, that visualization was really what crystallized it for me. When I met my partner, I felt the way that I imagined that I should feel when I was in a healthy relationship.
Rather than, oh, this is a familiar trauma. At least I know what to do with this person.
Yeah. Which is even just a pattern that I'm stuck in. And it's like, I mean, I had that myself. I I certainly had a type before I met my husband. And I had a very kind boss who helped me realize that the type I was dating was not the right type, because she would see how they would make me feel. The next morning after a date, I'd come into the office and I'd be, you know, bloodshot eyes. I'd be up crying all night. And finally, she was just like, I don't like these guys that you're dating. You need to shift. You need to consciously shift the kind of men that you're going out with. And she was actually the one that got me into online dating. I was an online dating very early adopter. And I found that through online dating, I was able to dial in my preferences more, and I was able to do more screening for the right type of people instead of sort of dating by chance. So I loved that experience. And I even named my mission for myself. I called it Operation DNG, Operation Date Nice Guys. I know nice guys has taken on a new context, but this was 20 years ago, where what it meant to me was, I want to date someone who makes me feel heard. I want to date someone who's kind and compassionate, who makes me feel like we are connecting and they're curious about me, and all of these things that we all want in a relationship. But I had a very specific definition of it for me. And when my husband first walked in the door at our first date, and mind you, he was very cute. I thought he was very cute when I saw his profile. I had all these rules and strategies that I had developed when I was single. I threw them all out the door and I saw his profile. I was like, let's meet up. And he walked in the door and I was like, wow, he's really cute. But he was dressed super preppy. He was like not my quote type. And my first thought was, he's really cute. Maybe there's somebody I could set him up with. And then because I had clarified for myself, nope, you're doing Operation DNG. You need to slow it down. Give this guy a chance. And then I was able to really connect with him and let him unfold and realize that what I'd been responding to in that immediate chemistry and first, you know, butterfly connection was that familiarity, was the chase, was, like you're saying, the triggering all of these other traumas, probably little t traumas, but, you know, these other patterns that were under the surface. That's what I was responding to, not true compatibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something, you know, we've talked on my dating podcast, and yourself and so many guests have had that similar thing. That's a pattern I've noticed, is so often it's the guest telling me they're really not someone I thought I'd go for. Thought, okay, this person has potential, but it's a shame the way they dress. Or why do they make such weird jokes? Like, there were actually things that they kind of thought, okay, maybe these are red flags, or maybe these are ways that this person isn't the fit for me. And in sort of stepping back and giving that person a chance, they were like, maybe they're not who I expected, but they're who I'm married to now. And, you know, it's such an interesting thing that it flies so in the face of a lot of the dating advice, building a list and what are your deal breakers. And I think whilst there's a place for that, it is also possible to get over prescriptive and nearly write your way out of some of the really great people that are out there for you.
Yeah, completely. I see so many people that are looking for these. Now, there's so many flags too. There's the green flags and the red flags and the beige flags and the pink flags. I've literally like done TV segments on all colors of flags. Not even joking. And to me, it's a little bit of looking for reasons to say no, rather than reasons to say yes. Because ultimately, if we were going to unpack what's underneath that, we all just want to be loved. We all want to be cared for. And a lot of times we are afraid that if we open up enough, if we let enough people in and they disappoint us, maybe they weren't quite our type, but we let them in anyway, and then they disappointed us, then shame on me. And it ends up hurting our own self-esteem and our ability to then go back out in the pool and find someone else. But like, I'm kind of done with the flags. I'm kind of done with the ick. And what I tell people to do is just to lean into curiosity. That was what was so clear to me. When I met my husband, as soon as we sat down, I knew that he was different. And our conversation, while I couldn't literally tell you one topic that we discussed. I don't even remember the context of the conversation. I remember how I felt. And I felt like, wow, this is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. I want to know more about him. I want to know how his brain works. I want to know how he thinks about the world. I want to know his views on all of these things. And that kind of feeling of leaning into that curiosity is the kind of thing that sustains a long-term relationship. We've been together now 20 years, and I'm still curious about who he is. And that, to me, that's the goal. That's what I want all my clients to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet we can feel inclined to want to figure out everything on the first date. And I'm often saying to people that the only thing that you should be, but also maybe the only thing you can figure out on a first date is, do I want to see this person again? And I think that really speaks to the concept you often talk about of slow love, of taking this stuff one step at a time, that dating can be incredibly tough. There can be a lot of rejection. We can be feeling very overwhelmed, and we don't have to have all the answers. We just, I think, like you said, we lead with the curiosity. We take it one step at a time. Maybe then you're pleasantly surprised versus the binary of, okay, this stranger I've just sat down with, are they going to be my forever person or not?
It's a lot of pressure to put on ourselves and on the other person. And thank you for ringing the bell for slow love. You know, I talk about that all the time on Dates and Mates. But I really believe in slow love because, one, I've lived it. Two, I've seen so many of my clients live it. And three, I think this is where the fun lies. Like, I feel like there's so many people that are dating out of obligation right now because, and you know, I love dating apps. Dating apps have been sort of a double-edged sword. I don't have to tell you that. And while it's created a tremendous amount of opportunity, and especially for women, and it created more opportunity in the dating pool, but at the same time, it's created a lot more noise, a lot more busy work. You know, it's kind of like if we just think of even how our daily lives have shifted with the way that we live online all the time, and especially coming out of the pandemic, where we were at home, but we were always connected. And I feel like that element of just being constantly connected and having all of these different communication tools has just created a lot of sort of chaos in the dating space, where it is on us, or it is on daters, to get that clarity for themselves before they walk into the dating space. Because otherwise, you're going to be pulled in a million different directions where you can't even hear your inner voice and your inner intuition that's telling you, yeah, lean into that person. No, no, no. Red flag. Actual red flag. That is your trauma speaking. That is your father. That is your ex-boyfriend, you know, that is someone that is making you feel something for the wrong reasons.
Is it butterflies or is it anxiety?
Yeah. Or is it indigestion? I don't know. But it's like all of the things. But we can't do that at speed or at scale. Mm-hmm. We just can't. Our brains aren't wired for that. We have to slow down the interaction. And I'm still a fan of dating multiple people at once until it's clear that it's someone is a fit or not. I encourage my clients to continue to be on the apps, to continue to talk to multiple people, to be upfront about the fact that they're talking to multiple people. But if it gets to the point where it's just total noise and chaos and you can't keep up with your notifications and you feel overwhelmed and you feel burnout by the dating apps, that's when I either tell my clients, look, you need to take a break. Go off of the app for 1 week, 2 weeks. Set a time when you're going to come back to it, but give your brain a little bit of space here so that you can recalibrate. Or I'll say, just go down to one app. Take the other apps off your phone. Don't even worry about it, because you don't have that nagging feeling in the back of your mind like, oh, well, what if I'm missing my person and they're on that app that I never check? Or I missed this message and now are they off of the app? Maybe they've already met their person and I'm cast to the wayside. But just focus on what's in front of you. And that's constant work, I feel like, in all areas of communication in our lives.
Yeah, because that pressure is really there. And I loved what you said there about setting a time when you go off completely if you're experiencing that burnout, and then set a time when you come back on. Because whilst that in itself might be viewed as pressure to some people, I think there's something to very intentionally stepping away and dispensing with the expectations. Because otherwise, yeah, you can be there each day thinking, oh, should I be downloading it? Am I missing out? Are people in my life asking me, like, so when are you going to meet someone? This is one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about today. Like, the expectations can be so huge. And I think oftentimes it's not until we do maybe some work on ourselves, or heaven forbid, when we're in the wrong relationship, that we realize a lot of what we've soaked up, a lot of the pressures that we've soaked up and not even realized, or the expectations of what relationship we should have and when.
That's so deep, as usual. Very deep.
Well, you know which show you're on today.
I know, right. Expectations are resentments under construction. That's one of my favorite quotes. It's by Anne Lamott. And it's so true in dating. I just find I'm constantly having to manage expectations with my clients. And I think a lot of this comes back to slowing down and to being in the moment. Like, I coach people on just listening. Because if you're really listening, you're really, truly, empathetically listening, you're not in the future. You're not thinking about, can I introduce this person to my parents? Are we going to go to that concert next weekend? You're not playing forward, and you're not ruminating on the past. Oh, my ex-boyfriend, or, you know, whatever the stories are, my parents, whatever it is that you have told yourself up to this point, you can only be here. And you know very well that anxiety comes up when we are not in the present, when we're fixated on the future, or when we're ruminating on the past. That is when we amp up our anxiety, our depression, our, you know, frustration and our overwhelm, all of those feelings, those that can negatively impact dating. And they really do negatively impact your ability to connect with that person in front of you. So I try to wipe away expectations for my clients. I focus on preparation. You do all of your preparation that you can, getting to the date. Make sure you reread their profile if you met online, or just figure out what you're curious to know about that person beforehand. Sometimes I'll have my clients think about some stories that they can share on dates that really help emphasize who they are, what they're looking for, what their values are. And then we do all the preparation and then we put it away. That's the foundation. It's like, I'm going to give a sports analogy, even though I'm completely not a sports person, but like, sports teams will, they'll run different plays, right? They'll practice and practice, and then they'll visualize, they'll do a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. And then you get to the game, and then there's another player on the field, and you don't know what that player is going to do. So you have the hardwired practice, but then you stay in the moment and you adapt to what's happening in front of you right now. So I prepare my clients like they're going into a match with that same sort of presence, just being present in the moment and not having any attachment to what's going to happen at the end, what's going to happen a week from now, a month from now, in your future, just what's right here in front of you.
No, I love that, being in the present. But if you do enough of that work behind the scenes, then there's kind of a muscle memory that can kick in of, oh yeah, this is a moment to bring up that story. Or I'm thinking of asking this question, but I remember Damona said, no. And also, not for nothing, you know, someone being really present with you, you know, particularly maybe when you don't even know that person yet, that's attractive. That person giving you their whole attention, like, everyone benefits in that scenario. Yeah, so could not agree more. We're so on the same page. It's lovely. And I'd be interested in your thoughts on, you know, some of the big barriers that can be really difficult to navigate in dating that I know you speak so articulately on, is discrimination that can happen in the dating pool.
I had a feeling you were going to bring this up, Bobby.
I'm a big
so
topics
let's go
person.
There.
You know this.
Yeah, let's go there. So I'll kind of come back to where we started for a moment. I am Black and Jewish and was very much a fish out of water for the first half of my life. The standard of beauty where I grew up, it didn't look like me. The images that I saw on television and media did not look like me. So I had to really grapple with not feeling pressured to conform to certain standards of beauty and to lean into the things that make me unique, because I knew I can't hide them. I can't walk away from them. They're deeply a part of who I am. And therefore, if I am going to find love, I have to find someone who loves all of me. And the more I lean into the things that make me unique, the more that the people who aren't into that will lean out. And that strategy worked for me. And that's why I really, from whatever background, try to have my clients really lead with authenticity. Like some dating coaches, God bless them, but sometimes they'll like do like a glamour shoot and they will, you know, have you straighten your hair if you have curly hair, or have you put on a waist shaper, do all these filters, whatever. And no shade if that's how what you want to do for you in your dating life. But for me, I'm like, how are you going to show up on the date? How are you going to feel?
Also, if I may, is that for you or is that for the other person?
I'll send folks to you to unpack that, because I think that is a deeper issue, right? Who is it for? And I think we actually dress for a lot of people, not just for the person across from you. But I see, particularly with women, I see women being much more critical of other women who they're not interested in dating than I do see their dates being critical of them. So that's a whole other story that we could talk about on a later date, but it's a good question to raise. But, you know, I just find that when we lean into authenticity, that's when we find our match. And so when I talk about authenticity, I'm talking about just the totality of who you are. So a moment ago, you were talking about expectations, and like there's expectations from parents, there's expectations from our community, there's expectations from our schooling, and we start to categorize people based on these invisible lines, whether it's race, whether it's education, or socioeconomic status, or even location. I deal with that a lot, where people are like, well, they have to be within this 5 mile,
They're the other side of this particular motorway, so it could never work.
It could never work. I know. And my husband and I, when we met, he lived way on the other side of town, and I said it was like a long-distance relationship because it could take an hour in traffic, in LA traffic. Forget about it. And I say, like, to think that my perfect person, and no person is perfect, but he's perfect for me, that I just wasn't willing to cross this freeway to get to my person, what I would have lost, what I would have left behind. So I really encourage people, as I said earlier, to allow dating to be our biggest opportunity for discovery. Relationships are the best mirror to reflect what's really happening with us. If we lean into that and we begin with that preparation of really clarifying, what do I want? What am I looking for? And how have the people that I've dated in the past maybe not lined up with that? What are the patterns that I have in my past dating? And then when we start to examine those things, then we start to get clarity around, well, I have always dated this particular race or this particular height or this religion. But is that my value or does that belong to someone else? And a lot of times with clients, I'll find they've either only dated their own race because of familiarity. And yeah, sure, it's comfortable. It's, quote, easy to date someone that has the same skin tone as you. They maybe have moved through the world in a similar way as you, or the same religion. But then we make a lot of assumptions. Like even being Jewish, there's a whole range of what that means, like from Reform to ultra-Orthodox. And the way that I grew up is very different than somebody who grew up in an ultra-Orthodox community. So just that label that we have of, well, they're all Jewish, that doesn't necessarily mean similarity. But because we are so overwhelmed, a lot of times we look for shortcuts and we're trying to thin slice it and say, okay, well, how can I eliminate these people from my pool? And we haven't stopped to think about what it is that we're even pursuing. And if it's not a lot of times the sameness, it's really just that understanding. It's that understanding of like, I come from a different world, but they hear me, they understand. And then we also share values. Like that is to me, one of the four pillars of a long-term relationship. You've got to have shared values. Then you've also got to have common goals for the future. That's way more important to me than any label that you'd slap on somebody.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And this is something that reminds me of conversations we have on the show about choosing the right therapist. You know, because it can go any number of ways of who that person is going to be that's the fit for you. And much like in relationships, sometimes it's someone where maybe you do have things in common, where certain things don't need to be explained, don't need to be said. But equally, on the flip side of that, there could be something deeply validating to someone that's completely outside of key areas of your experience or identity, but they absolutely accept you and see you and appreciate your perspective. And, you know, that for me highlights how you hear people say opposites attract, or you hear people say, well, the science says you look for someone with a similar facial structure. You know, there's all these back and forth. And in reality, it's probably both. It's probably either. You know, it's what is that connection that you can build with that person? It's never been about, do you have the same amount of melanin?
Yeah. And I love the analogy of the seeking out a therapist, because the other element of that is the discovery of dating. Like, it's your opportunity to explore and see. Maybe you've never dated someone outside your race or religion in the past, but what if? What could you learn if you had a conversation with somebody that grew up very differently than you did? And it doesn't necessarily have to be your forever person. So when you say it's like choosing your therapist, I work with therapists a lot. I refer to and refer and get referrals from therapists. I think it works really well with the work that I do, because I'm not doing therapy. I'm doing dating strategy. And it works best actually when somebody has done some of that deeper therapeutic work. But people will always say to me, well, how do I know I'm with the right therapist, the perfect therapist? And I'm like, are you getting benefits from the therapy right now? Then it doesn't necessarily have to be your forever therapist. I've changed therapists like 6 times in my life, but each therapist I worked with, I got a different perspective from, and I was able to connect with them, and I was able to get some relief, some guidance, some clarity in the moment, some healing that was really helpful for me at that time.
Mm-hmm. And something along these lines we were talking about off air is how a lot of therapy related jargon has come out into the world, into sort of mainstream lexicon. And that can both in dating and in life be a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. And again, I love the internet for how quickly ideas spread. But at the same time, I think now we feel like, well, I watched a YouTube video, so now I'm an expert. And we sometimes, we're looking to make meaning out of everything. And we may see someone talking about, I don't know, whatever, narcissism. And then maybe out of our own pain from past relationships, we start to label, well, like, oh, that person's a narcissist because X, Y, Z. And I don't know about your listeners, but I am not qualified to diagnose someone with narcissism or with, you know, anxious avoidant attachment style. And I think these are all great tools to just sort of keep in mind, but I think they sort of turn dangerous when we start using them as reasons, first of all, to label other people, and then they're no longer helpful to us in dating. If we are chasing a label just so that we can justify what has happened to us. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, to take the narcissism example, there's something deeply ironic about that relationship went badly and therefore that person's a narcissist. There's something in that that could be quite narcissistic of, oh yes, all these people are the problem. And there's no part of it for me to examine of why do I keep dating people that I've now decided are narcissists, you know? It's a legitimate thing that can be a concern within a mental health realm. But like you say, it's not something we can go throwing big words like this around. And it's often to our own detriment. You're a lot more likely to be able to figure out what's happening for you than for that ex or for that stranger you're sat on a date with. So maybe we start there. And if they are a narcissist, we don't choose them. But, you know, I don't know if we can be labeling them.
But we do. We do. It, just because we are trying to make meaning. And a lot of times it helps us to swallow rejection and disappointment if we can have a label for it and we can place it there. And then we can also step away from our own responsibility, like you said, to take care of ourselves, to understand our own labels or are just our the way that our own brain works and our own patterns. So, you know, I thought it was important in my book, F the Fairy Tale, I thought it was important to, I think this is part of the fairy tale. It's not all great, beautiful rom-coms and fairy tales that we're telling ourselves. Like some of the negative tales that we tell ourselves actually impact our dating and relationship path. And I'm interested in examining all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a lot of how we look at it, right? You know, it can feel reassuring. And I've definitely been that friend that's all too ready to cast off somebody's ex as soon as they break up and I'm allowed to say bad things about them. But, you know, there's ways we can look at it of, okay, that person was selfish, or did you and that person have different priorities? And maybe there's more that we can sort of build on and learn from that approach than, oh, fuck them. They did everything wrong. Nothing about me to examine here.
I love that process of examining with my clients because, again, if we're going to look at dating as a process, it's a set of learned skills and then it's a process of self-discovery. And if we're doing that, then I like to use all of the lessons that we get to help us chart our path, to help us understand ourselves better. So to me, it's a missed opportunity. If you're just like, well, that person's a narcissist. And of course, there are people that do have these disorders. So I'm not diminishing that. But sometimes when we are looking to label it, then it robs us of that opportunity of self-discovery. So I do that with my clients and my Dates and Mates listeners. I unpack, well, what happened in that last relationship? What did you learn from it? How have you grown? What do you know better for the next time? Because otherwise, it is just a waste of our time. You know, we that's the thing I see. I've been doing this for 17 years now, and the speed of dating is the thing that has increased the most. And this fixation with time, because now we are so efficient with so many technological tools at our disposal, it has made us so efficient, but we're going so fast that we're missing a lot of the juicier moments. And that obsession with time just keeps coming up for my clients of like, well, I don't want to waste any time. All time is ticking. Well, I'm running out of time. And I feel like your time is really important. So how you spend it and who you spend it with really means something. And if you're just going out on dates haphazardly and you're not doing any of that sort of personal debrief with yourself or, you know, examining to chart your path, then you are kind of just wasting your time. Mm-hmm. And what's the point? What's the point? I mean, for a momentary butterfly or just to get it in or whatever. I don't know. There are reasons, I guess, to date without intention. But is that really how you want to spend your time?
And I'm reminded of someone I used to know where she described like her biggest fear in dating was marrying a mediocre man in a suit. And what she meant by that was giving into this kind of time pressure, these kind of expectations of getting married by a certain age and having someone from, you know, all these different perspectives of people in your life, of who that person should be, and her being there at the altar, standing across the person that she'd found. She'd got to the time limit, and this is the person she'd slotted into this predetermined, I should get married by this age to this kind of person, and this is what I got. This is the best person I could find in the time that I had, and I'm here on the altar, and it's too late. I can't get out of it now. Everyone's watching. This is the pinnacle of the expectation, and I'm not so sure about this. And I'd never heard it explained so clearly, and I even describing it now, I'm like, oh yeah, I feel the fear.
Yeah. And okay, so going back to this idea of dating apps have been a double-edged sword for women, but I still feel like better than not. I think dating apps have created opportunity for women to find love later. And then when we couple that with women making strides in the professional sector, making more money than ever before, getting more advanced degrees than ever before, we do have a very different dating pool. And I feel like we make better decisions when we have choice, when we have opportunity. So what you just described to me is sort of like my quintessential client. Like, that's the story that I get a lot of times, because we have the ability to focus on other things. And it sounds like she has other things in her life that are really important to her that she's focusing on right now. But there's this fear of like, I can't have it all at the same time. I can't do both. And I believe that we can, but we do need to create the space to do it mindfully. And it starts with either identifying, like your friend did. It's interesting, that analogy of the mediocre man and like the picture that paints for me, the mediocre man in the suit. To me, that is an identification of how I do not want to feel in the relationship. Because to me, like, it's very visceral. That feels like I've settled. That feels like I'm not lit up by this person that I'm with. My life is not enhanced. It is a figurehead. Like, there's a whole
everything must be fine because we've made it look like it is. We're wearing all the right garments, so everything's grand.
Right. I can extrapolate out a whole emotional story from just that one phrase. And so what I would say to your friend is, well, then what do you want? What is the inverse of that for you? Because that goes back to what I was saying earlier, of that really paints the picture of how you want to feel and the relationship that you want to build. And it's amazing to me to see how quickly this happens for my clients when they start with that clarity and that mindset piece. You know, I have people who, I talk about them in the book, who like, we're divorced and single for 12 years. And we're like going through the motions. I'm going on dates. I'm hiring matchmakers. I'm doing all the things. And they never stop to do that one mindset piece of really getting clarity on what they're actually looking for. What are their goals? What are their values? How do they want to feel? And once you crystallize that, I've had clients that it's happened in 3 months, they met their person. In 6 months, they're married by the next year. They're completely changing their life just from that, starting with that one small decision. And that is why I'm so passionate about this work. I feel like the person that you choose to partner with, it affects every other aspect of your life. And so it is the decision. It is the most important decision that you're going to make. So why is that the decision that you would leave to chance? Why is that decision that you wouldn't do mindfully? That makes no sense to me. I'm really passionate about helping people figure that out so that everything else can really click in, and then they can build the life that they want, with this being sort of the foundational element of two whole people, not you complete me, but two whole people coming to the table to support one another and help each one of you grow your dreams.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because there's few things that will have as much impact on your mental health, but also few things that could be as healing. Like you said, it's not the you complete me thing, but there is something about two whole people showing up for each other, choosing love, even when it's difficult, that can be so healing and so lovely to be a part of. And on that note, we'll wrap up there. If people want to find out more about your wonderful work and continue on those hopeful notes that you're leaving us on, there's a whole book with a wonderful name. And we're a podcast that swears, so you can say what it's really called and everything.
Well, it's really called F the Fairy Tale.
Sure.
Because, you know, I do a lot of mainstream media, so it has to be family friendly. But yeah, it's F the Fairy Tale, Rewrite the Dating Myths and Live Your Own Love Story. And I'm glad that you said like uplifting messages. That's really what I try to do. And I do that on Dates and Mates every Tuesday. We put out new episodes for the last decade because I have been totally transformed from that little girl that didn't really know what healthy relationships looked like mm-hmm. to building a life that I swear to you, I did not think was possible before I did this work and before I met my husband. So I just want to keep spreading the good word of love. I do that every week on Dates and Mates and now also in F the Fairy Tale.
Absolutely. And if the listeners haven't already picked this up, there's a reason why I so respect your work and look up to what you do, because you're so good at addressing the nuance, the gray areas, the details. And I think so often when it comes to relationship advice, people want there to be rules, people want there to be shortcuts, as you described. And there is that inclination as a professional of like, okay, do this, this, and this. We want to be able to give that, but actually a lot of the beauty is in the details and the individual journeys that are all of us are on. So
that's great. I like to say that F the Fairy Tale is not a how-to book. It's a why, how book. So it's like, if we understand why things are the way they are, then we can understand how to shift our lives. So thank you for the opportunity.
Stunning. And so on that note, we'll be back behind the paywall shortly for our Apple Podcast subscribers. And I'm interested to go back and forth a little bit more with Damona on dating apps, because I think both of us can have mixed thoughts at times.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.